DW Africa Link.
Where are the powerful women in Nigeria? There's a critical conversation going on about the future of Nigeria's democracy and the role of women in shaping it. Women make up almost half the population, yet in parliament, they are nearly invisible. Lawmakers are now reviewing the 1999 constitution, and one hot proposal is to reserve seats for women in the National Assembly. Supporters call it a necessary corrective measure. Critics, well, they argue quotas alone won't fix the deeper problems for women in politics. So, what are those problems, and how can Nigeria move towards real representation for women? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday, here on DW.
Nigeria has one of the lowest rates of female representation in parliament across Africa. Women currently hold less than 6% of seats. That's far below the continental average of around 25%. So to close that gap, reforms like the Reserved Seats for Women Bill are on the table, aimed at guaranteeing women a bigger voice in legislatures.
Women should vie for such positions and not expect that such are given to them on a platter of gold. I think they should vie for, if they need to compete amongst their colleagues there, they should do the competing so that you men don't keep laughing at us that in certain things we say what a man can do, a woman can do better. That's my take. So they shouldn't sit and be expecting that some concession is met for them.
Here are the key areas of the Nigerian constitution that need to be amended based on the 2025 proposed bills and ongoing national discussion. Is the issue of inclusive governance, reserved seats for women and persons with disability in national and state authorities.
For deeper insight, let's bring in Judith Israel Shuaibu, a politician from the opposition Social Democratic Party in Nigeria. I also have DW's Nigeria correspondent Ben Adam Shimang. Hello, both of you. Welcome to Africa Link. Judith, how does it make you feel that Nigeria has so few women in politics?
The truth is, Nigeria cannot build a strong democracy by leaving half its population behind. Women are not asking for favors, really. You see, we are here demanding fairness, representation, and a system that reflects the strength and diversity of our nation. It is, of course, saddening how women are represented or underrepresented within political space, especially in Nigeria. So, of course, we'd like to see better. You see, there is so much that national development stands to gain, and we would grow way faster. We would progress as a nation way faster with inclusion of women in politics. And I believe that this is the natural course, this is a natural order that should be taken seriously moving forward, Eddie.
What do you think is behind this low representation?
Well, it's a number of things, you see. It's a myriad of challenges. One, it's still the primitive thinking. It's the misconceptions that women have less to bring to the table than maybe your average man can. It's the stereotypes that are existing within leadership spaces. And then also, it is also how institutions are fashioned. You see, political institutions, leadership institutions, the way they are fashioned. So already these tools and structures exist, and these are the things that come together to really limit the representation of women in leadership spaces, especially political spaces, really. And these are things that have to be looked at and definitely reformed.
Right. So what's your overall assessment of the constitutional review process so far? Because one of the main aims is to, you know, address this particular issue we're talking about, increasing women representation in politics. What do you make of that? Is that the right way to go?
Well, absolutely. Constitutional review is definitely one step in the right direction. So far, the constitutional review process has been more political than people-driven, though. Nigerians, especially women and young people, feel excluded, for sure. And then until the process reflects citizens' real voices and leads to actual implementation, it would remain a document, really, of promises than progress. But it is a step in the right direction. It just needs to be forged properly. It needs to be more intentional. And then, of course, we need to look at how it needs to be implemented. But it's a step in the right direction, for sure.
Thank you, Judith. Ben, let me come to you, because you've been following this whole process, the constitutional review process, which is ongoing. What can you tell us about that so far, especially in terms of addressing the issue of increasing women representation?
Yeah, Eddie, you see, this has to be taken in a very holistic manner. It's not just the issue of the women having special seats. There are many other things. But because we're talking about the processes involved, even if it's going to affect the women, there are a lot of processes. There are laid down procedures. The legislative requirement is that a bill, or there has to be some proposals for this amendment. Then that will be presented to the National Assembly. You have the first reading, the second reading. And thereafter, there's what you call public hearing. You invite stakeholders, the women, traditional institution, religious leaders of note. They'll just come and debate on that or pass comments. Then all these comments will be harmonized because we are still talking of a bill. Then that moves to the Senate. There are 109 senators. For any bill to move to the state of becoming an act, there has to be at least 72 senators or something. Then at the 36 states of the Federation, there have to be about 20-24 to accept that this can go on.
But with that said, Judith, I'd want to come back to you on this. Are there aspects of the process that you feel needs to be improved to ensure that it's truly impactful?
There are definitely areas that need improvement as far as the process of the constitutional review is concerned, right? You see, the process first needs to be more inclusive and more transparent. There are 360 lawmakers, right? And then representation in the National Assembly. But compared to Nigeria's population, that is but like a grain of sand in the ocean, you see. And these are the people who are there to debate on this matter. Sometimes they will organize a public hearing here in the capital city of Nigeria, that is Abuja, and then a few people may be in the room. But all in all, you'll see that the process is very elite driven. The process is very narrow. And so at the end of the day, it winds up being laws or policies that would wind up not necessarily crisscrossing and cutting across to cover the basis as far as the necessity of the Nigerian population. So the process definitely needs to be more inclusive and more transparent. While there are processes on paper with regards to how it should be done, we have not seen full implementation and follow through as far as the detail of what it should take to review the Constitution. And as far as bills, including, you know, several neglected areas or sidelined areas or underrepresented areas being holistically included or involved. So we've not seen that. So there's definitely need for those processes to be inclusive and more transparent. You know, a lot of people right now don't even know what's being debated about. If you stop the average Nigerian on the street and ask anything of this subject matter, the average Nigerian has no idea, which means communication is not done properly. Consultation is very limited. So there's every need to also reach grassroots. And then these consultations with grassroots folks needs to be intentional and intensive. And then the communication lines have to be very clear. Even along media spaces, the communication line for the review on the process has to be clear. And then there needs to be strong political will, even on the side of the National Assembly. It's very, very important so that when amendments are passed, there will now be process for implementation. And the process for implementation also needs to be taken very seriously. There's need to be deliberate and intentional about implementation process. Otherwise, it would just be yet another paperwork, you know, and yet another document. But it is important that the process is done and done properly so that we can see results and then not just theater set up.
Right. Thanks for that, Judith. I find what you said about stopping people, asking them if they even know what's going on or they understand what's going on, and you feel many will not know what's going on. I find that very interesting. And so I'm going to come to you, Ben, because you've been on the ground talking to people. I want to find out from you, is that the sense that you're also getting? How engaged are everyday citizens in this process? Is there a sense of public participation?
Yes, you can see there is a sense of public participation, but the number is so limited. If you're talking about over 230 million people, and you just have people under 400 as lawmakers trying to control the whole system, the number is a bit abysmal. But again, if you also look at it, when they move to the state level, those who are also participating to ensure that the constitution is tinkered with, some are just busy talking about their hunger, they're talking about insecurity, and you find those who are radically inclined simply saying that those in authority will always make a constitution that will favor them and not the masses. We've been here, people just are voters and they don't see what they call dividends of democracy in Nigeria. So, Madam Judith said, there has to be a lot of awareness campaigns. And we also expect that lawmakers should go back to their constituencies, meet the constituents and tell them, these are the issues on ground. What is it that you have to say? And even when those feelings are gathered and recorded, at a point, if they're injurious to some governors, they don't get them passed at all. They don't get to pass all of those things.
Right. So is there a possibility, Ben, that political parties could obstruct certain changes? I mean, it seems generally people want change. That's why the constitution is being reviewed. But is there a sense that all hands are on deck for the overwhelming changes that are needed?
Yes, there is that clamor, the demand for it, that there has to be change because there are some provisions that are injurious to some Nigerians or many Nigerians or even the majority. But again, there are some people in authority, you call them the state governors. They tend to have a firm control over the state assemblies. And in their state assemblies, mostly in some, you just see that many laws that are passed at the state level are always coming from the executive, meaning the governors. The governor will want this passed and the state assembly will simply pass as he wants. Now, if there are amendments, for example, there is the clamor that local governments that have been controlled by governors financially should have their financial autonomy. Now, by the time this kind of proposal goes to the state assembly and the governor does not like it, he simply tells the lawmakers, don't pay attention to that aspect. Vote no for it. And that is why almost every legislative year, you find out that there are always clamors for the change of law, but you just see that some people, especially the governors, will just stand against it.
Right. Thanks, Ben. I mean, look, again, we're talking about a constitutional review and that there's so many things that need to be reviewed, but our focus is, you know, talking about the increase in women representation in politics, right? And this is why it's important. And I love that, Judith, you are with us. But I'll first let you touch on what Ben said. I mean, you are in the opposition. Do you feel that all parties are on board with the increasing of women's representation in politics? And if not, how strong is your position to ensure that that is really high on the agenda and it actually works out?
Okay, well, parties could definitely do better in terms of their contribution to the process that, you know, guarantees that women are more included and represented in leadership, right? And you see, that's why conversations about the reserved seats bill in the parliament is quite a lot, or in legislature is very important. Yes, while that is amazing, there are at least two things that I think that I want to just highlight in this moment. You see, Personally, for instance, I support the reserved seats bill only to an extent. Now, I'm looking at it twofold. The part that the parties have to play as opposition. Each political party needs to be able to do better as far as including women in its processes and as far as production, or rather, how candidates are produced to even participate in elections to begin with. Political parties definitely need to do better. If political parties do better as far as the administration within party context, including more women, then we will be able to now project for candidates, more candidates being produced to run for offices. And then we can now begin to talk about all the other aspects as far as what women need to be able to function. However, it is very important that both ruling party and opposition party do better as far as producing women and including women. And there are other things that they can do outside just giving the opportunity, because one culture that is common in Nigeria is this handouts kind of culture, like tokenism, right? So there's a mentality or a culture that makes it look as if, okay, let's just do things a little bit. For instance, the United Nations Affirmative Action, right, that says 35% representation. Usually in political spaces, in my experience, what you see is that leaders come together and say, okay, let's just give 2-3 seats, or let's just give 1-2 seats to women. And you would find out that those seats are labeled like women leader, women leader, this or that. But then is that the only thing that women can do? Can women only lead other women? Women have capacity to lead in other dimensions and have expertise and specialty and actually very divine, you know, set up within a woman's component to be able to function in other capacities. Let's not even talk about how many women actually have the expertise and the merits in their own right to be able to function. So sometimes these things can be very limiting, and these are things that even opposition parties and the ruling party needs to work on alike. And then there has to be a scheme that sets up to support women and then to also produce women that are fully functional and in capacity as well. So beyond just providing certain spaces, I think that that should actually be eradicated. Women should just be included holistically. But then there is also the part where it is important that both political parties, ruling party and opposition party alike, need to be able to set up structures that would make sure that women who are fully functional are occupying the right spaces and are allowed to function to the best of their ability. And that is the fact that resources somehow need to also be made available. Women need to, because it's very expensive to really run leadership in Nigeria, right? And that serves as another added layer of limitation for women. And some of these things need to be made available intentionally. But more importantly, other structures as far as the development and holistic, you know, rounded furnishing of women need to also be made available, especially for those who do not have access, so to speak, to certain form of resources, not just financial, in other areas as well, so that we have women who have capacity and then are exposed and included, but then rightly done as well. So definitely political parties have a huge, huge role to play. And then, of course, even the ruling party too has a huge role to play as far as boosting women representation is concerned. And I think I would just allow for this conversation to flow before we get into really what my thoughts are about the reserved seats bill as far as the legislature of Nigeria is concerned.
Somehow I thought you had already expressed your thoughts on it. I think it came out quite clear with what you said. Yeah, partly, which I mean, I'm sure it's a lot to say. And I find it very interesting, to be honest, what you're saying, because yes, it's not just a case of affirmative action. It goes way beyond that. What I also want to find out is if you get a sense that this is generally even supported a lot by women themselves.
Well, there is massive support, so to speak, or relatively, I would say, right, for that bill. It's just that you have different categories. And for instance, I belong to the category of women that insist that it needs to be taken beyond just reserving special seats for women. So reserving special seats for women does not cut it in the grand scheme of things, but it is a step in the right direction, right? Because you see, Nigeria has one of the lowest female representation rates in Africa, just 4%. You see, so reserved seats alone won't solve it, because how many seats would really be reserved for women? But it is in the right direction. right, is a step further from where we are at the moment. What we actually need is reforms, party reforms, fair primaries, you know, all of that, financial support, whatever, whatever, right? We need all of those things. However, you see, the added layer is this. There needs to be a point where leaders sit down, look at it, and realize that it is not a handout that should be done, a handout approach that should be done for women, but an intentional, deliberate inclusion strategy needs to be developed and implemented. We need to realize that women make up the larger population as far as Nigeria is concerned. And if we're going to get it right and develop laws and policies that cut across and deepen democracy and foster national development, you cannot sideline the larger part of the population. And that is why the bill for special seats and affirmative action is only a step in the right direction. But really, the method and strategy that we need, especially in Nigeria, for this to be effective is to deliberately and intentionally include more women. But then beyond doing that, we need to make sure that there's reform in political parties. We need to make sure that there's fair primaries. We need to make sure that there's a strategy and a structure for financial support for women, especially those who are, because we have women who have capacity in Nigeria, but are very limited, right? Because of resources. And then we have to what? Quotas, open doors, and then capacity building and all of that. So we need to be intentional about the steps and take it a step further beyond reserving certain seats. Because like I gave you an example earlier, in political parties in Nigeria, right? You have one particular position that is called woman leader. And in some of those political parties, there are a few who are coming up and are doing better. You'll find four women on the National Working Committee, you know, and all of those kinds of things. Some are taking it bit by bit, but you have the larger majority not making the necessary effort. That particular seat is, because it is carved out for women, women seem to be pushed to that. So if we replicate that in legislature, it would be counterproductive. It won't cover the basis for the results we're trying to achieve. But I am in leadership. And the part of the reasons and my motivation for being in leadership is to be able to create spaces for women who really can do this to be able to run with it. But as far as the position for presidency itself, that may be a future thing for me. I don't think I want to do that right now, but I would definitely rally 100% behind the women I know should take up that position in this moment, where those who would make the process, you know, for those women.
Okay. I'm pretty sure Ben Shemang would have voted for you, right? Ben, I mean, you are looking forward to a woman president in Nigeria, right?
We love that. But again, when you have big political leaders making some statements that sound a bit derogatory, former President Buhari said the women belong to the kitchen. He did not cancel that statement. He said they belong to the other room. He never annulled that statement. Many guys in the northern Nigeria, culture, religion, they just believe the women should just be seen, not to be heard, stay at home. We're going to bring whatever you want. But I truly want to see a woman become president in Nigeria, and we have the stuff, we do have them, and they can deliver.
There you go. Thank you, Ben. And I definitely agree to your words. To be honest, it's even a bit weird that we are discussing the possibility of a woman being president. I just think anyone who is capable, male or female, should just be able to be president. So it's rather unfortunate that we are talking about systems that seem to be in place to hinder one side from, you know, striving as far as the other side is. And this is exactly why it's important to keep talking about this. Thanks a lot, Judith Israel Shuaibu, a politician from the opposition Social Democratic Party in Nigeria. I also have DW's Nigeria correspondent, Ben Adam Shemang. Thank you both for your insights.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
Across Africa, there are examples of what's possible. Rwanda, Senegal, South Africa, they've all made big strides with stronger gender policies. Rwanda, for instance, leads the world with more than 60% of its parliamentary seats held by women. Experts say the key is not just quotas, but also political will, party support,
and cultural change that makes women in leadership the norm, not the exception. Nigeria's constitutional review could be a turning point. This is a moment of potential change, a chance to reshape the future. But as we've heard, the road ahead is about more than creating reserved seats. It's about shifting attitudes, building pipelines of female leaders, and making sure women have the resources and safety to campaign. Because here's the bottom line, really. A democracy where half the population is missing from decision-making is, by definition, incomplete. Don't you agree? What do you think? Your voice matters in this conversation. So share your thoughts with us on Facebook at DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.